you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us as we continue with a look at Asian American film. The new book, The Golden Screen, The Movies That Made Asian America. Jeff Yang is the author of the book. Michelle Yeoh does a foreword to the book as well. And it's not only a beautiful book, which it is, incredible photographs of so many of these influential films, but also fascinating analysis of what these films represent. Jeff Yang, so good to have you with us on Film Week.
I'm so incredibly excited to be here. Thank you, Larry.
Well, let's start because I love how you lay these out chronologically. And Flower Drum Song, despite many of the stereotypical characters, I know a very important film for many Asian Americans of a particular age who had not seen themselves on screen. And of course, you've got a wonderful cast of Asian American actors in Flower Drum Song. Let's start with that film and its importance.
Yes. I mean, Flower Drum Song is one of those, like many films in the book, love-hate films for many Asian Americans. The love part, of course, is simply it is the first film in which there's so much Asian American talent on screen singing, dancing, speaking, mostly without accents, in an American city, in San Francisco Chinatown. And that, for many of us, is the first time we really saw Asians doing what they were doing.
Nancy Kwan, James Shigeta, James Hong, so many terrific actors in this.
Of course, that's the good side, right? The bad side is, you know, it's one that, it's a story that was written with a certain set of tropes, a certain set of, some would argue, stereotypes. There is a set of storylines that seem to lean into the kind of diaspora differences between recent immigrants and those who are more assimilated. And there are people who find some of the jokes even that kind of pop up in the dialogue a little cringy. But after all, it was written by Roger Zimmerman Hammerstein. It was directed by, you know,
Henry Koster, yeah.
Yeah. So we're not talking about something that was necessarily striving for authenticity, but definitely it is still something I think that we need to celebrate.
Well, and it's great you start the book with it from 1961 to sort of set the stage, coming out of an era where there really hadn't been a lot of Asian American film. And you move on through the years here. But one of the things I like is you mix what are your big films with some of the ones that are smaller movies that may not be as well known. Eat a Bowl of Tea, for example, from 1989. The importance of this film.
Yeah, I mean, another Chinatown story, but a very different one. A drama with a very kind of centered perspective, looking at essentially the generational differences between that first wave of immigrants, the so-called bachelor society, who came over, you know, kind of in the era of exclusion and therefore had no wives and few family around. And this story is both a love story, a family story, a story of the tensions that occur in terms of people's expectations and people's performance, in this case, you know, between the sheets, right? but it's a lovely story. It's an Asian American iconic indie film. And it was created by Wayne Wong, who
Chan Is Missing was his first film, I believe.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And Chan Is Missing, another film in the book, absolutely transformative film. Wayne would, of course, go on to be really arguably one of our most iconic and greatest Asian American living directors.
1989, a good year for Asian American film because Arthur Dong's Forbidden City, USA, is also out. This a 56-minute film. I'm not familiar with this. Share with us what it's about.
Well, you know, it's almost like continuing the theme of Chinatowns and this whole sort of tension between what people perceive and project onto ethnic enclaves that, you know, gather together China and a kind of perspective on Chinese culture with our reality. Arthur Dong's film Forbidden City USA looks at, in some ways, the real world behind Flower Drum Song. It was the chopstick circuit, as it were, where a lot of, you know, early Asian American performers first got their chance to get on stage. And it was cabaret girls, it was singers and crooners and dancers of all types who were performing within the confines of, again, the sort of exotic ambiance. But some of the biggest celebrities in San Francisco actually went on a regular basis to Forbidden City. Anybody who's a major star passing through San Francisco would drop by. It was a destination. And it was one of the first places a lot of people got to see Asian American performing talent in that kind of a setting.
For you, when you were a kid, was there a film you distinctly remember, Asian American themed film, that really had an impact on you?
It depends on how one defines Asian American film, especially as a kid. I mean, I grew up in the, you know, 70s and 80s when Asian American cinema was still sort of finding its legs, as we noted. But the first film featuring an Asian American that kind of gave me a gut punch and made me realize that what I'd been missing all this time, essentially, was probably Enter the Dragon, right? Bruce Lee, who had been born in San Francisco, grew up in Hong Kong, but came to Hollywood to find his star before returning to Hong Kong in order to truly achieve it. Just seeing him on screen for the first time, it made me catch my breath.
Well, it's such an entertaining film, too.
An incredible film, a film that's both epic and full of both action and thrills. And some thoughtfulness. I mean, he brought together a multiracial cast of protagonists, of heroes, at a time when civil rights was still kind of being contested in the streets. And I think that, you know, that film, like his all too small canon in general, just showed how much could have been accomplished had he continued to live beyond his untimely passing.
I was going to Hollywood High at the time when Enter the Dragon came out, and I remember it was at the Chinese Theater, and I was so surprised. A kung fu movie, because, you know, we had the genre of kung fu, to think of that being in the Chinese Theater. And then my friend saw the films, like, you got to see this. This is great. But that was a real smashing of a barrier.
It was arguably the first time that a Chinese star was actually at the Chinese Theater. But yes, he absolutely flying kicked that barrier and smashed it to pieces. And frankly, for a lot of Asian Americans, that representation, even though there are those who subsequently said, well, we're not all martial artists, we can't all kick like that, it nevertheless proved to us that somebody Asian could stand at the center of the screen and dominate it and cause the entire audience just feel rapt at his presence. That was amazing.
We're talking with Jeff Yang, journalist and best-selling author. His new book, The Golden Screen, The Movies That Made Asian America. He's also written Once Upon a Time in China, A Guide to the Cinemas of Hong Kong, I Am Jackie Chan, My Life in Action, he wrote with Jackie Chan, and Rise, A Pop History of Asian America from the 90s to Now, New York Times bestseller. And he also launched one of the first Asian American national magazines, A Magazine, in the late 90s and early 2000s. We're talking about his new book, so many films that are highlighted here. And one I have to talk about, because I just last night happened to watch Sam Fuller's Shock Corridor. I'm a big fan of The Crimson Kimono, set in Los Angeles's Little Tokyo. I actually curated the film and showed it at a film festival that I programmed. And I was so pleased because James Shigeta came and I was able to speak with him after the screening, the late James Shigeta. Your thoughts about that Sam Fuller film.
Well, in some ways, it kind of closes off the two legs of the conversation we've had so far. The first is James Shigeta was, of course, also the star of Flower Drum Song. Here he's not singing and dancing. He's in the center of a film noir as a detective who's looking to solve a murder. But as in Flower Drum Song, he is actually the romantic lead of this film. And this is where the notion of breaking down barriers comes in. While he's not doing it with martial arts, he was doing it, you know, in a way that I think for a lot of us was just as breathtaking. This is actually, I think, the first film in which an Asian American man actually not just gets the girl, so to speak, but there's an on-screen kiss, an interracial kiss between James Shigeta and his female co-star. And that for Hollywood, even in that era, was a gigantic breakthrough. For generations, you could not actually depict interracial love, interracial physical affection. And that's something that actually kept a lot of Asian Americans off screen or marginalized for many, many years.
I actually got to drive James Shigeta home after the screening. We did it at Caltech. And just wonderful to have him talk about his career. And it was a very memorable evening for me as a fan of his work. That movie we're just talking about is The Crimson Kimono, 1959. Director Sam Fuller, Victoria Shaw, Glenn Corbett, starring alongside James Shigeta. And it's a real critic's favorite, as many of Fuller's films are. We're going to continue our conversation with Jeff Yang. It's a beautiful book, The Golden Screen, The Movies That Made Asian America, with a foreword by Michelle Yeoh. We'll be back in just 1 minute on Film Week.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at NortonSimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle with Jeff Yang, best-selling writer and author of the new book, The Golden Screen, The Movies That Made Asian America. And I would be neglectful if we didn't do a movie from the great Anna May Wong, whose life we talked about a few months ago on Film Week. You suggested Daughter of the Dragon from 1931. This is a 70-minute Fu Manchu film. Anna May Wong stars in it. Sesu Hayakawa, another great actor alongside her. This has some interesting things to analyze in the film.
Yes, it is not a good film. It is actually almost unwatchable. And when I did watch it, it was just very much a kind of grip the sides of my chair kind of experience.
For multiple reasons.
For many
I guess.
Reasons. Warner Oland, of course, plays Fu Manchu in the great tradition of Fu Manchu basically never having been played by an Asian person. He is, of course, the demon doctor, you know, the great supervillain invented to essentially serve as more or less the expression of yellow peril. And what's really interesting in this film is that Anna May Wong plays his daughter. And she is kind of torn in this triangle between loyalty to her evil father and her growing attraction for Sesu Hayakawa's character. Sesu Hayakawa's character being an FBI agent sent to thwart the doctor's schemes. And it's one of the first times you actually had that sort of traditional setup of a dashing law enforcement officer, an ingenue of some sort, and we actually feel like by the end of the movie, the two of them can actually be paired up. They can have that sort of walking off to the sunset together. But of course, this is a Hollywood movie in 1931, and the two of them don't even end up kissing. They both end up dying at one another's hands. It's a tragedy, ultimately. But a tragedy not just on screen, also to a certain extent for the broader cultural landscape. I mean, Sesu Hayakawa was an iconic figure who ultimately could have been probably one of the leading Lotharios of the screen. But because of the Hays Code that prevented, again, depiction of interracial relationships, because of just plain
Which
old racism.
Which affected Anna May Wong as well.
Yes. They could not actually find the love that they perhaps deserved on screen.
You include here Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon from 2000, a film that isn't American explicitly, but obviously a huge effect with its all-Asian cast, and just a spectacular film.
Well, one of the things we actually made the decision to do with the book is to include films that are both Asian American films, Hollywood films, and also films from Asia that made a big splash in America. Because the film is first and foremost about the experience of the audience, what we saw and how it changed us. And Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was the film that should have proved out everything that we thought could have been true, right? That Asian Americans or Asian, rather, that Asian images on screen would not drive away audiences, that people would actually read films. It's entirely subtitled, all Chinese. That all these things could be successful in the hands of a master director like Ang Lee. And that proved to be true. This is a film that made $100 million back in 2001. And that's $300-something million today in our inflationary times. But the success of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon did not change Hollywood. It actually ended up really just, you know, unleashing a few more period martial arts films on the world. And all that faded away. And it took until, I would argue, many years later when Bong Joon-ho and Parasite came forward with its Academy Award success for people to really start feeling comfortable with the idea of subtitled cinema.
Well, and here we are where Michelle Yeoh is one of our biggest movie stars in the world today, including the United States. I mean, it shows, obviously, and she's not alone. There are many other, you know, great Asian American stars now.
And the thing I think which even Michelle would probably say is, what took you guys so long? I've been around for a long time. But Michelle is absolutely the kind of the queen of a rising Asian diaspora star community. She is perhaps one of the few Asian stars speaking English or acting in English who, if you see her name above the title, you're probably more likely to just say, I got to watch that film.
Yeah, well, because anything that she's in, you can't take your eyes off her. She's a star. I mean, not just an excellent actor, but she's got the star thing.
Yes.
And that's exactly right. I did want to mention Joy Luck Club, 1993 adaptation of the Amy Tan novel. Your thoughts about the significance of that and how it dealt with culture.
It was such an important milestone for us, to the point where even today people use it essentially as the benchmark for Asian films, films with Asian casts. It's the one people point to and say there has not been a film like this since Joy Luck Club, right? And it is it's a moving melodrama. It's a family story. It was the thing that introduced us to a generation of young Asian American stars who would in many ways dominate the landscape for Hollywood for the years to come, while also sharing with us some of the kind of empress dowagers of a prior generation. And for all of that, I think Joy Luck Club will always stand firmly in our memory as perhaps one of the most important film accomplishments of its era. But again, it's a benchmark where it took another several decades before we finally got to a place where a film like that could break through to public consciousness, could be a box office success and not just a critical one.
Jeff, I thank you so much for joining us. And I just want to say, for any film lover, I recommend the book because you spend so much time with it. Absolutely fascinating. And you don't need to be Asian American to appreciate the book. All you have to do is love film. So thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
The Golden Screen, the movies that made Asian America. Jeff Yang, our guest. Thanks so much for joining us on Film Week. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.